ran a story saying their sources said there was no evidence of covert funding from China, and none of the 11 candidates had been compromised. The National Security and Intelligence Advisor, Jody Thomas, testified before a parliamentary committee saying there was no evidence of the funding claim. And David Johnston, the special rapporteur, examined the intelligence and found the same thing and said there was no evidence the candidates were acting in concert with each other and that Trudeau was never briefed on the matter. Here's intelligence expert Wesley Wark.
It was never very clear to me how this alleged network was supposed to operate and how money was meant to flow and you know, all of those kinds of details. Never made its way into the media reporting from Global News.
Cooper seemed to admit the same thing. In December, he ran a story that said Trudeau had not been briefed and that China had not earmarked any money for the 2019 election. But the story changed again when in February, Cooper wrote another story that made pretty much the same claim. Trudeau had been warned more than a year prior to the 2019 election that Chinese agents were assisting Canadian candidates running for office, and China was funding a network to this end. Cooper based this story on a four-page memo, but when Johnston looked into the matter, he found Cooper was basing the story on an early draft of the memo. The later draft sent to Trudeau did not contain the claim China was assisting candidates, nor suggested any recommendations. In short, Cooper's story suggested inaction by the Liberals, when in fact, the memo seen by Trudeau did not say China was helping candidates. Therefore, no action was required. But by then, the Globe and Mail was getting into the act. In mid-February, it ran its biggest story. It said China had an orchestrated machine operating in Canada that had two primary aims. One was to ensure that a minority Liberal government was returned in 2021, and the other was to defeat certain Tory candidates. Work also points out that good intelligence agencies know the difference between intent and capabilities. Just because someone says they would like to do something doesn't mean they have the capacity to carry it out. Based on what I read, the reporting didn't make this distinction clear.
It very much struck me that the Globe was not willing or able to make a distinction between expressions of intent and real capabilities. You know, the evidentiary base for which was not clear about, you know, forms of interference with nomination processes and so on, and the role of proxies, but it was all pretty murky.
Here's another curious thing about this and other Globe and Mail stories. The basis of them were secret CSIS reports, which the Globe might not have in its possession. Instead, they said in their stories that they viewed these reports. But if they don't have them in their possession, that could be problematic. From my perspective, journalists should always ensure they have their own copies of such controversial material in case it's ever questioned. When David Johnston looked at the intelligence behind the Globe story, he found there was unconfirmed indications a very small number of Chinese diplomats expressed a preference for the Liberals to the Tories in the 2021 election. But there was no evidence that China had a plan to orchestrate a Liberal minority government in 2021, or were determined the Conservatives not win. He found China did not prefer either party, merely candidates who were sympathetic to them.
It really struck me that some of the language quoted associated with boasting by Chinese consular officials was clearly no more than that. It was boasting. We saw it throughout the Cold War on the part of Russian diplomats and intelligence officers who were super good at boasting about their capabilities and generally ran pretty inefficient intelligence networks.
Soon afterwards, Sam Cooper began producing stories for Global News about Liberal MP Han Dong. Born in China, Dong was elected to Parliament in 2019. Cooper's confidential sources said CSIS had been investigating Dong for years and that he was one of the 11 candidates Beijing had backed. Cooper's sources said Dong was a witting affiliate in China's election interference networks, that there were irregularities with his 2019 nomination process, basically that China had helped Dong win the nomination. Cooper followed this up with an even more sensational story, claiming that in early 2021, Dong had suggested to the Toronto Consul General for China to delay releasing Michael Spavor and Michael Kovrig from detention in China. The two Michaels had been arrested in 2018 after Canada detained a Huawei executive at the request of the U.S. government. Cooper's story claimed Dong said that by releasing the two Michaels, it would help the opposition Tories.
Yeah, I think the global story in Han Dong made absolutely no sense to me.
Indeed, the release of the two Michaels clearly would have helped the Liberals and Trudeau and not the Tories. Trudeau would have looked brilliant if he had managed to secure the release of the two Michaels before handing over the Huawei executive.
And in Sam Cooper's reporting, again, we see this indication that this is an allegation for which he doesn't have corroborating evidence.
Cooper did include a statement from Han Dong denying the allegations and stating he had in fact asked for the release of the two Michaels. The Han Dong story caused an uproar, forcing the MP to resign from the Liberal caucus. He gave an emotional speech in the Commons, vehemently denying the allegations, saying he'd actually told the Consul General the opposite, to release the two Michaels immediately.
I want to assure Mr. Michael Spavert and Mr. Michael Covert and their families that I did nothing to cause them any harm.
The day after Cooper's story ran, the Globe and Mail reached out to government sources who said the transcripts of Dong's conversation with the Consul General did not indicate he'd asked them to hold the two Michaels in prison. Dong promptly filed a lawsuit against Global News seeking $15 million. In his statement of claim, he denied the Global News stories point by point, including allegations he'd received any assistance from China or its operatives in 2019. Johnson examined the intelligence report about this incident and found the Cooper story to be false. Yet Cooper continues to stand by it, as does Global News. In the network's statement of defense, it states that the allegations thesis made about Dong are not, quote, presented as factual findings, end quote. They go on to say, quote, rather, the information from intelligence sources concerning Dong is clearly described as allegations and the responding positions of the various parties involved, including Dong, are reported, end quote. In short, if Global's confidential sources are wrong, well, it's not Global's fault. But stories using confidential intelligence sources kept coming. In May, the Globe and Mail reported that a secret CSIS report said Chinese officials had targeted certain MPs, including Tory MP Michael Chong and his family. It also said a Chinese diplomat in Toronto was involved. Chong has been critical of China's human rights record, in particular the treatment of the Uyghurs. This story also triggered an outcry in Ottawa.
Chong, a former cabinet minister, now serves as the Tories' foreign affairs critic.
But what was really going on with this story? After all, Chong had been completely unaware he was of any interest to China, having only been informed by the Globe and Mail reporters just before they ran their story. One would think that if Chong was a target of harassment, he would have known and personally seen some evidence of it. A 2021 CSIS report said Chong was targeted, yet there was no evidence Chong or his family had been harassed by Chinese officials. But Global Affairs Canada has recently issued a statement saying they did find efforts to smear Chong on WeChat, which is a Chinese social media app, some of which came from state media outlets and accounts.
There was no evidence that any physical harm was intended to Mr. Chong or had been enacted, and no evidence that some of these ideas that were floated by Chinese officials about possibly finding family members and putting pressure on them in order to intimidate a federal MP, any of that had taken place.
Overall, the thrust of the Global News and Globe and Mail stories has been that the Liberals benefited in the last two elections from China's meddling at the expense of the Conservatives. Yet there's no solid evidence this is true. Professor Wark found the Globe referenced only a handful of intelligence reports in all of their recent reporting. Meanwhile, the Globe's editor-in-chief, David Walmsley, has said the facts behind the Globe stories are, quote, uncontroverted.
I remain baffled by why the Globe and Mail has not published any of the reports that they received. And on top of that, has not published any rationale for not publishing the reports. I regard that as a responsibility that they have to their own readership. If they're not going to publish the reports, say why not? And the other thing is that with the Globe and Mail reports, although Mr. Walmsley claims that none of the Globe and Mail stories have been called into account, the fact is that government officials have said that some of their reporting is in error.
In late May, Johnson produced his initial report on the foreign interference matter, which included an examination of some of the intelligence that Global News and the Globe and Mail relied on. While he said there's no doubt that foreign governments are attempting to influence candidates and voters, the elections of 2019 and 2021 were well protected by mechanisms in place, and there's no basis to lack confidence in their results. Nor did he find examples of ministers or Trudeau or their offices ignoring intelligence advice or recommendations on foreign interference. In regards to the media stories where he examined the intelligence they relied on, he found there was misrepresentations, issues out of context, and outright falsehoods. He said they showed an incomplete picture of what was really going on. What was your response to David Johnson's report in terms of what he found is what appears to be its veracity, its logic?
I thought it was a good, solid report, and I thought many of the issues that he identified were spot on as things that needed to be looked at.
Johnson stepped down as special rapporteur in June after weeks of being vilified by the Tories over claims he lacked objectivity. The stories that I focused on from the two media outlets here are only a selection of the many stories both ran on the topic of foreign interference. But I've examined the totality of the stories, and almost all reveal the same pattern of being based on confidential sources or other intelligence sources without much corroborating detail and missing vital information or context. In June, Sam Cooper left Global News. He's since set up a Substack page to continue his work. Huda Mukbiel departed CSIS at the end of 2017, but she was not surprised by David Johnson's findings.
This thing has become so partisan, and he's been, at the center of it, but he's basing his conclusion or assessment based on access to information, intelligence, the reports. I know that he's a man of integrity. I mean, he was our governor general, for God's sake. I trust that he reviewed these files. So I will go with that, because here is someone of integrity that has had access to this information, and that's his finding.
Given the issues with CSIS, the problematic history with the Sidewinder report, and the fact that the reporters are only seeing a small selection of the intelligence on China and its interference, I feel they should have shown more caution, or at least more qualifiers, in their reporting on the matter. In the end, should there be a public inquiry? I think an inquiry would have some inherent obstacles, namely that CSIS wouldn't reveal what it knows about Chinese interference, either because its evidence is so weak, or it would expose how the agency collects information on people, and CSIS would not want to do that. So much of the inquiry would have to be held in camera, defeating the purpose of a public airing. Moreover, the partisan hysteria in Ottawa would likely ensure the inquiry devolves into a political football. Above all, the Tories would not want to hear that the allegations they've been slinging around for months are based on thin gruel. I've been reporting on this stuff and following the ins and outs of these institutions for years, and even I'm confused about what's going on. So a public inquiry might be worth the effort, as it might actually get to the bottom of whether there's been any foreign interference or not.
That's your Canada Land. You can email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read them all. We're on Twitter at Canada Land. Our website is canadaland.com. Additional reporting today from Bruce Livesey. Our senior producer is Bruce Thorson. Additional production and editing from Tristan Capicchione. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofor. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. I'm your host, Jesse Brown. Theme music is by So Called. Syndication's handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Hi there. You just heard Canada Land, the show where I'm typically joined by a different guest each week for a long feature interview. What you're going to hear next is Canada Land Shortcuts, a topical news show where I'm joined by a different co-host each week, and we talk about the media's coverage of various stories in the news right now. Wait for it. Nora Loretto, hello.
Hey.
Today on the show, Nora, Greenbelt Blues. If we already knew that Doug Ford was corrupt, can we still consider it a scandal?
Ooh.
Welcome back to Shortcuts, where we talk shit about the news.
Happy to be here.
Unequivocally, we won't touch the Greenbelt. Unlike other governments that don't listen to people, I've heard it loud and clear. People don't want me touching the Greenbelt. We won't touch the Greenbelt.
Premier Doug Ford is refusing to back down from plans to build on land that was part of Ontario's protected Greenbelt.
We're going to continue building homes.
This week's scathing report from Auditor General Bonnie Lizick found the move to free up 15 lots was heavily influenced by a small group of developers.
Bonnie Lizick, in a pretty damning report, said that the decision favored developers with connections to the housing minister's chief of staff.
Ford categorically denies that.
No one had preferential treatment.
The finance minister seemed to suggest voters are more concerned about housing than the Auditor General's conclusion that the developers stand to gain $8 billion.
Nora, you know how the last story was a story in which, like, I hated everybody involved, including the media, and it was, like, a reason why people hate us?
Mm-hmm.
This is a story why people should love us. Mm-hmm. Like, this is like a story of everything going the way it's supposed to go. The government does something super dodgy. We were asking questions from the start on Wag the Doug. The Toronto Star was asking questions. The Narwhal, like, just didn't look right. It smelled bad. The smell led to digging, and the smell of something stinky led to smoke. And we pointed out, like, it looked very, like, how did the developers know which land to buy? Did the government, did the Ford government tip off these developers? Are the developers donors? You know, that got the public engaged. That's how it's supposed to go. The media digs, the media finds these connections. We start to spell out how this probably happened, and the public, thousands of people complained about this. The opposition parties engaged by the public who are engaged by the media, they start banging their fists. We demand an investigation. Then we have checks and balances and processes. The Auditor General opens up an investigation. She has the power to compel documents that journalists don't have. So where we smelled the smoke, she actually found fire, like a dumpster fire. And the findings were way worse than what was expected. Like, the system is working here. She found no. It was not that the Ford government tipped off the developers. It was way worse. The developers actually showed up to f***ing social events. Developers who gave Ford lots of money show up and hand brown envelopes to a Ford staffer. And they say, you don't have to tip us off which properties are going to be freed up. We're going to tell you which properties need to be freed up. And the Auditor General finds this, and she reports it, and she report the main findings. Direct access to the housing minister's chief of staff resulted in certain prominent developers receiving preferential treatment. And we have it here. It's smoking. It's the whole thing. And the Auditor General specifically praises the journalists in this process.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to say one thing, too, before I do answer questions, is that I do want to say kudos and really congratulations to really great investigative reporting, and I believe it came from the Narwhal. I believe there was CBC involved, and I do believe a little bit from the Star as well. And thank you for that. I think the investigative reporting has a place and a future still, and good work.
Heavens be praised. Investigative reporting has a place and a future. It was the instigating factor in holding a government to account. Yay, everybody. Mm-hmm. Will it matter at all?
No. My God, no, of course not.
No.
This is such an interesting story because I am from this part of the world, as you are, and I grew up actually basically in the Greenbelt, and I have always paid attention to development. You know, one of the things where people ask, Nora, like, where did you get your politics? When did you become so radical? And the answer is, well, I became radical when my play areas in the forests beside the town that I grew up in became developed, and I became so rapidly anti-home development in the GTA that it really formed the foundation of my politics.
This is the superhero origin story. They took away your playground. capitalism took away your seesaw, and that's how it all started.
They took away an abandoned YMCA park that was in the middle of the woods that I spent my childhood in, you know, getting drunk and floating down the creek on a stolen truck tire.
Oh, well, they made a powerful enemy.
It was very sad. You know, we'd steal couches. We'd put them on our friends' skateboards. We'd wheel them into the ravine and we'd sit on the couches until your friends set the couches on fire because they're bored, right? Real Southern Ontario skid stuff. Yeah. So I've been watching this, as many people have, for many, many years, and the connection between the Ford government and the developers has been well known and well documented, and one of the most circulated pieces that I've ever written was actually thanks to research that Canada Land had done, and this is from back in 2017 or 18, about who funds Ontario Proud, right, which is, of course, a lot of the developers. So, yeah, is anything going to happen? This is where we have to look at the history of the Greenbelt and the history of the politics around the Greenbelt, and I think that while we can be cynical, and I think that the inertia of politics is that, no, nothing is going to happen, the only reason we have a Greenbelt is because of popular pressure. So the Greenbelt was developed in 2005, so not that long ago, and people might ask themselves, well, how can this band of land have been protected so late? Like, you know, Ontario has been developing for many, many years. Like, where did this come from? So 2005 was Dalton McGuinty, and the Liberals, you know, politically knew that their base, especially in the GTA 905 area that touches the Greenbelt, where they can go back and forth between the Liberals and the Conservatives, that these people care about protecting the Greenbelt, or this belt of fertile land. Before 2005, you had the Harris government, and the Harris government refused to properly protect the Greenbelt, but they also promised that there would be no development, that they would allow only farming to happen on the Greenbelt. Now, some of the properties that were included in these tracts of land, these 15 tracts of land, were purchased between 2002 and 2005. So developers who were very close to the Conservatives then, who know that the price of land in Ontario, regardless of where you are, is going to be a good investment. You will make a lot of money off of this stuff. They start gobbling up pieces of land in the Greenbelt, but they're not allowed to develop it because it has to be protected farmland. Okay, but that brings us back, you know, 10 years. Then you actually go back further and realize that the reason why the Greenbelt was ever there in the first place was activism in the 1970s and the 1980s to protect this very rich farmland from development. And if we don't remember that, then we might make incorrect conclusions about how this story is going to end. And so it was citizen activism that fought and defended this tract of land back to the 1970s, all through the 80s, through the 90s, managed to force Mike Harris to not allow housing development on it, force the Liberals to protect it in the state that it is right now. And I suspect that there will be enough power in Ontario from Liberal and Conservative voters alike to force Ford to back down on this. We will have to see. I'm very cynical, so I would say no.
Will we remember the history from, like, how this was protected in the first place and from the Harris? We don't even remember what was in this report that came out, like, last week. Like,
I know.
Like, the report, like, methodically debunks everything that Ford is feeding us. Like, well, I'm building homes. It's like, well, no, actually, this is not a good way to build homes. You're not going to increase housing by doing this. This is not cost effective. Every single thing, he's just acting as if the report doesn't exist or that no one's going to read it because no one's going to read it, right? Like, so, like, this is one of these things where because we all, like, if you go back to the very beginning of the story where we suspected, like, could it be that Doug Ford is in the pocket of these developers? Well, everybody kind of knew that from the start. So there's no scandal. So you can't get people angry. So he'll get to do it. Like that's where this, I mean, I remember the way in which, like, he's very, like, they're very good. They're much better than their opponents are. When Kathleen Wynne, there was some whiff of corruption, like they really drove that message. That this was a corrupt government, and they got people to vote that government out, and people were angry with that. And it's a joke when you compare what that government was accused of and guilty of. Like, but to this, like, this is like cartoonish level corruption.
It is, but let's not forget the broader political forces at play, right? Kathleen Wynne was at the end of a stale government that had no hope in hell of holding on to power because they had been in power from 2003, right?
Like, and do you think Ford is too? Like, you seem to be suggesting that you think this is going to do him in. Like, I don't get that sense at all. I feel like...
I don't think it'll do him in, but I do think that there is going to be enough pressure to maybe pause his decision to develop the Greenbelt. He's going to win the next election, regardless of what happens with this issue. But I actually do think that it's possible that the Greenbelt will be saved. and that he will be forced to turn around. Now, it's the dog days of summer. I'm sure he's calculated that no one cares about this. But people need to remember that, especially white people in the province of Ontario, they care about trees. They care about nature, right? Ducks Unlimited is a thing, right? So in a way where this is not as big an issue as the housing crisis, for example, there will be people who will get into the streets to stop this or into the fields to stop this. And it's going to probably give the Liberals, who are on the ascent a little bit with their leadership race, and they've got credible candidates that aren't a complete joke, it'll give the Liberals some wind in their sails.
Like interim Liberal leader, what's their pants?
No. The people
who,
running.
So what? Are they? Do they exist? Are they?
I have no idea who the interim leader is.
Who right is now that person? We don't even know. Doesn't who matter. That is.
They don't matter. But they're in the process of reconstitution. And when you have a process of reconstitution, you need a project. And this is the exact ideal project for the Liberal Party. And so I think that the politics, the political context is such that Ford will... He's happy with a very broken and disorganized Liberal Party. This will solidify support in areas of the province that Ford absolutely needs to keep. And I don't think that he's going to lose, but I think that there's some real possibility that the people will win on this one. So
listen, you starry-eyed dreamer.
It's just the vacation in me. I can't.
Yeah. Halifax is, it suits you.
Yeah.
We can agree that Ducks Unlimited is a thing. Nora, we are going to duly note news stories that people need to know about. This one was just breaking this week. Ricochet correspondent and Canada Land contributor Brandy Morin is back at Ferry Creek. And the RCMP don't seem to know that their media exclusion zones are illegal. And the media keeps hauling them to court and proving, and judges keep saying, this is illegal, but it's really hard to get cops to follow the law. And so they created another illegal media exclusion zone and threatened Brandy and other journalists with arrest as they raided the Indigenous-led blockade, trying to prevent the forestation of old-growth trees. And I think we just, like, I don't know what we can do, but keep pointing it out every single time the cops break the law and stop people from seeing what's going on there.
Well, one thing I think that does need to happen, especially journalists who have a lot of faith in the rule of law in this country, is that we have to understand that police do not protect us, and police actually stop us often from getting the story, and the courts are not necessarily all that effective. It's effective to have a court decision, but not effective if the police don't enforce it. And so not only is there, you know, the imperative of journalists to be aware of this and to lend our support wherever possible, we need to understand what's happening here. And we need to be watching, is this getting worse in this country? Because freedom of the press is absolutely important. And this is like a brazen attack on that freedom of the press. So duly noted.
That is Shortcuts this week. Nora, thank you for taking time from your vacation. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
We're on Twitter at CanadaLand. I can be emailed at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything you send. Nora, where can people find you?
Oh, I mean, okay. So in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be in Georgetown, Ontario, and then I'm going to be in Timmins, Ontario, but that's all for vacation. So if you want to find me, give me 2 weeks, and you can check out my daily news podcast at sandynora.com/dailynews.
This episode is produced by Aviva Lessard with additional production by Caleb Thompson. Our managing editor is Annette Ajofo. Our editor-in-chief is Karen Pugliese. Our theme music is by So-Called Syndication by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. Thank you for supporting Canada Land.
CJSF 90.1 FM is the campus radio station for Simon Fraser University, located on Burnaby Mountain in BC, Canada. As a campus and community station, CJSF strives to provide points of view that are rarely expressed on mainstream media. This includes music that is not the top 40 and news you will not find on the big media outlets. CJSF 90.1 FM, diverse, independent, yours. Check us out on SoundCloud or at cjsf.ca. Just a bend in time.